I could swear that what I can't believe. I could swear that what I heard was a self-serving, witness-excluding, amateur investigator with a superfluous white paper, as moot as it was inaccurate and late, after a year-long wait, while the author and his ghostwriter were engaged in aging the fact reversal process.
Sure wasn't a fish.
I don't know. Must have been dreaming.
Some illnesses bring clarity. Who knows?
Aging the fact reversal process.
Sponsored non-commercial WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
And it's 801, and he's absolutely right. That's where you are, WBAI in New York. And coming up right now is Robert Knight and this news installment.
Well, good morning. Here's what's happening around the world today, Bernard. A Tokyo court has, for the first time, acknowledged the use of biological weapons by Japan during World War II and even before then. But still, they're not going to pay, rejecting demands for compensation by Chinese who claim that they were the victims of the germ warfare program. Tokyo District Court ruled that under international law, foreign citizens could not seek compensation directly from the Japanese government. The court did, however, acknowledge Japan's germ warfare program existed, and that court testimony from the victims was reasonable enough to believe. It's the first time a Japanese court recognized the official use of biological weapons programs during World War II. In the current ongoing war around the world, the Bush administration is moving even closer to the possibility. One of the trigger points we've mentioned in previous reports is whether or not the Bush administration will call for extra duty time for National Guard and Reserve troops. And this morning, troops are being called up for extra duty, a second year of service. For some of the troops across the country, they're including the 100th Security Forces Squadron of the New Jersey Air National Guard, they've been notified that they may be needed for a second year of active duty. That would be consistent with the reports that are coming from the United Kingdom and the United States of the probability, or the planning at least, for a United States attack on Iraq early in the year 2003. And, of course, here in the United States, Mr. Gonzalez, the legal advisor to President George W. Bush, it was revealed overnight, has in fact advised the president that he don't need no stinking botches to invade Iraq, that according to the presidential counsel's opinion, that the constitutional requirement that it be Congress, the legislative branch that declares war, is null and void, and that it is sufficient for the position of the president as commander-in-chief of the armed forces for him to conduct the attack on Iraq. White House spokesperson Ari Fleischer, meanwhile, said yesterday that the president will be making his decision on issues other than legal ones at the time, when such time comes that the attack is launched on Iraq. Some legislators say that the president must seek some form of congressional support. One of them, Senator Chuck Nagel of Nebraska, said, quote, "I don't play this game so much on what's legal and what's not legal, but if the president is going to commit this nation to war, he'd better have the support of Congress and the American people with him. That may mean a legislative fig leaf, as was used in the past for other international attacks by the United States Armed Forces. There is a conference going on in South Africa on the environment, and the story coming out of there today is that the subsidies that have turned farmers into multinational conglomerates is helping to cripple their counterparts in the developing countries. One of the originators of the Green Revolution has told delegates that the farming world is being dangerously polarized into two cultures. The first in North America and Western Europe is one of agribusiness, and the other in Asia, Africa, and Latin America were comprised of small-scale personal farms. One is a production by masses, the other is mass production, said the delegates at the conference that's taking place in South Africa. And in the local region, we have these stories here. The spraying to prevent the West Nile virus is ongoing, and it is coming into increasing criticism. Parts of Staten Island and Suffolk County will be sprayed later tonight. And the Staten Island neighborhoods of Oakwood Beach, New Dorp, and the Silver Lake Golf Course, and areas west of Huguenot Avenue will also be sprayed with Malathion between 8:30 p.m. and 2 a.m. In Suffolk County, Melville, South Huntington, Huntington Manor, and Huntington Station will be sprayed starting at about 7 o'clock. They're aerial pesticides, and once again, authorities will be using helicopters and trucks rather than close area spraying, as is the recommendation of some of these manufacturers of pesticides. And there is criticism increasing about that because the lethality of the West Nile virus is essentially confined to neonates and the very elderly, those with extremely weak immune systems. In the New York area, those who have been known to be struck or affected by it, not even necessarily all of them fatally, comprised an 18-year-old man, an 81-year-old man, an 84-year-old man in Queens, and a 77-year-old man in Babylon. And finally, in Newark, a belated discovery. A man reported missing in the September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center has been found in a hospital. George V. Sims' family says they learned of his whereabouts when the hospital called and said they believed that he was a patient there. He had been listed as missing since September 11th. List of several hundred victims from New Jersey listed him as missing because there is no verification that he was, in fact, a victim. The family members say that they believe that he was selling things near the World Trade Center when the attacks occurred, and apparently he had been hospitalized for some form of amnesia. Interesting that he is described as having been selling things there, because certainly much of the toll of the World Trade Center, you know, they released a list of the addresses of known victims that basically mapped into the Upper East Side and to some extent in Staten Island and across the river in Hoboken, essentially areas of moderate to upper middle class income, which would be consistent with working in the World Trade Center area. But as we know, there were many workers, guest workers, you might say, green card workers, some without them, who were involved in deliveries and street vending and other things. So we may not have as many details about the loss of the poor at the World Trade Center. That's some of the news. I'm Robert Knight for Wake Up Call.
Well, thank you very much for that, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
You know, I often think about the with the World Trade Center, the book, The Outsider.
Yeah.
Remember there was a plane train crash,
mm-hmm.
and the Cross Damon got out and took on another identity, and he was believed to have died in the train crash.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's going to happen with the World Trade Center. We'll find out that someone went and took another identity. Interesting.
Sure. The demographics are certainly, Amy, as on Democracy Now!, I believe, in the early days, looked at the immigrant workers there. That,
right, we're never going to know the number of people who died.
Right.
Frankly.
Yeah, some.
There were people who lived around the World Trade Center. You know, they just
some identities
stayed around there to find shelter.
Some identities were lost. Some were never known.
Hmm. Okay, you know, in Illinois, defense lawyers scrambled to meet Governor George Ryan's deadline to file clemency requests for death row inmates, but the governor said he was has yet to decide whether to commute any sentences. Ryan halted executions in January 2000 after 13 Illinois death row inmates were found to have been wrongly convicted. He gave defense lawyers until Monday to file requests with the Prisoner Review Board so its members can provide him their confidential recommendations before he retires in January. In March, Ryan said he would review each death penalty case and consider commuting the sentences to life in prison, but his spokesperson, Dennis Culotin, said the governor wants the board to review the cases first. It's called the Pontius Pilate approach.
There's
the governor.
Related issue that I did not include in this cast, but might as well mention now, in Nigeria. And one, as a newscaster, tries to avoid the rubberneck voyeurism of external cultures that is so endemic to the predominantly white male-managed press of the United States. But this is a serious story out of Nigeria. Certainly last week, Wake Up Call was covering the case of the Nigerian woman who was sentenced by a Sharia court, an Islamic fundamentalist court, to be stoned to death for an alleged act of infidelity. And this is developing this morning, a different case also out of Nigeria. A Nigerian man is to be stoned to death after refusing to appeal a conviction by an Islamic court for the rape of a 9-year-old girl. It's in Jigawa State, where authorities say that the 54-year-old man confessed to the crime and refused an offer to allow him to appeal the sentence. The spokesperson said that Malam Adu Baranda was convicted last month of the rape. He would have had 30 days to appeal. No telling when that sentence will be carried out or whether or not, well, actually, the local authority is saying that the governor of the state will not intervene in the case. The Nigerian federal government regards the application of the Sharia code and criminal judgments to be unconstitutional, but has yet to curb or intervene in capital cases or decisions like this. The Sharia courts were reintroduced with civilian rule in 1999. There's been no one stoned since that time, but now a number of cases are popping up again, and that's the latest.
And moving from Africa to here in New York, connecting back to Africa, there is a full-page piece in the Washington Post that starts on the first page and then goes on to the fourth page about the Negro burial ground in Lower Manhattan that Howard University is managing. The place where it is believed 20,000 people may be buried, a 5-acre 18th century cemetery. In 1991, construction workers excavating for a proposed federal building began unearthing intact burials, skeletal remains, grave goods, and remnants of coffins. And the piece is about what's happened, and it's called No Rest for African Burial Ground: Delays and Discord Trouble Howard's Preservation Project. And it says, inside a Howard University research laboratory, a deep blue steel cabinet holds a white tray cradling a newborn skeletal remains, partial right leg, left arm, tiny ear, arranged on black velvet like precious gems. Time erased the name, and history is silent on another mystery, whether the child was born slave or free. The others are nearby, down the corridor of Frederick Douglass Hall. Behind a locked door with an activated security alarm, The skeletal remains of nearly 400 men, women, and children rest in rows of cabinets stacked nearly ceiling high. The dead wait in this climate-controlled room for the living to resolve one of the most contentious disputes in the study of African American history. What began a decade ago as an ambitious archaeological project to study the remains, discovered when a federal construction crew stumbled across New York City's hidden African burial ground, has turned into a chaotic ordeal fraught with delays, funding problems, and accusations of racism. Today, the fate of the project hangs on fragile agreements between researchers and the federal government, with much at stake. Millions of dollars in public funds, Howard University's reputation, and promising research on the early impact of slavery in America all agree that the African burial ground, the largest and oldest known colonial-era cemetery used by enslaved and free blacks, could provide groundbreaking insights. The goal, however, remains distant. The research is one phase of a preservation plan for which the federal budget has grown from $2.2 million to $24.3 million. But no key phase is complete. Howard's unfinished reports, still in the draft stages, have delayed other phases of the project, and Howard officials have worried that the university's reputation as a top research institution could suffer. Construction of a memorial at the New York site has not begun, and twice the government had to cancel plans to reinter the remains, despite having paid $100,000 for mahogany crypts and coffins hand-carved in Ghana. The project was even affected by terrorism. When the World Trade Center towers collapsed September 11th, some artifacts that were being analyzed in a New York laboratory were buried in the rubble. Before that, the project's many delays had angered a group of black New Yorkers who consider the cemetery the sacred resting place of their African ancestors and a national symbol for black Americans whose ancestral roots were obliterated during slavery. Every stage has provoked an emotional struggle for control, and the disputes have been titanic. It goes on to quote Ali McLean, who's leader of the advocacy group known as Descendants of the African Burial Ground, who says, "We're very upset. This government brought my people here in bondage and worked them to death and dug them up, and to this day we are fighting to get the bones back so we can rebury them."
One of the relations to that Washington Post piece in New York City is that right now, this very moment, there is a one-hour prayer service taking place at the African burial ground here. This is the third day, annual day of prayer for the African burial ground project. And there is a gathering of families and commemoration taking place now at 290 Broadway between Duane Street and Reed Street. And there will be another one at noon and another one at 6 p.m. today at the landmark African burial ground, 290 Broadway, between Duane and Reed Streets. And the speakers are being confined only to representatives of faith-based organizations. Once again, right now, the hour of 8 o'clock, 12 noon, and 6 p.m. And further information on the project and today's activities can be obtained by calling 212-337-2001.
Hmm.
Well, thank you very much for that, Robert.
Yeah, it's just the whole piece is about the dispute, but just the facts of this burial ground where people are right now, saying that in the burial after burial, the researchers analyzed skeletons, linen shroud pins, and coffin fragments to draw conclusions about social conditions and the harshness of slavery. They found that children under 12, who made up 40% of the individual burials, experienced a high mortality rate and developmental delays caused by malnutrition and disease. Pre-revolutionary New York, which had more enslaved Africans than any colonial settlement except Charleston, South Carolina, preferred child slaves because they were inexpensive and unlikely to rebel, this according to Howard historians. The majority of the men and women exhibited signs of muscle tears and spine fractures, commonly associated with excessive strain and heavy loads. The scientists said that in some instances, they appeared simply to have been worked to death.
Yeah.
And so, as Robert said, a prayer ceremony going on now at 290 Broadway.
Okay. And it is 120 Wall Street that we're at. And this is WBAI in New York. It's 820.
In fact, we're at the site of a slave auction site.
Right. This is where the ships would come in and they would hold the auctions right here on Wall Street.
Well, coming up on Democracy Now, we're going to talk about the fact that some 60, at least, immigrant workers at Los Angeles Airport were arrested over the last few days. They said they didn't have the proper documentation. And you know that part of the laws around airports now are that by November, this is federal law, no one can be working, you know, baggage security, the people who screen the luggage, who I believe aren't American citizens, which means that thousands of people are going to be put out of work. And we're going to talk about that and whether that actually improves security when you turn over the whole workforce, and especially in places that had living wage campaigns like San Francisco Airport, where finally people are getting a decent wage. There has been very little turnover, which makes certainly for a secure airport. And now hundreds of people there are being thrown out of work. So we're going to talk about that and then look at the environment and hopefully also be joined by Ramsey Clark from Iraq, who has visited the site where he says 8 people were killed this past weekend in yet another U.S. bombing. So if anyone says, should the bombing begin in Iraq? The answer is it has. For 10 years now, the bombing has been done on a very regular basis.
Well, if they begin to take out all foreign-born folks from working in the airport, then it seems like they would begin to start the process of institutionalizing xenophobia in this country. Once it's done there, you can justify it everywhere else, too.
Absolutely. And you've got people who have worked there for years, people who have been given, you know, best screener of the month award, who have found weapons and explosives, and these people are being knocked right out. And this makes us more secure. We're going to talk with one of those people, Ms. Valencia, who won an award at San Francisco Airport and now could very well be kicked out. We'll look at definitions of security. It's 8:22. You're listening to WVAI 99.5 FM. So, see you in a little while, Bernard.
Okay, and we'll be back in just a moment. Stay tuned. If there's anyone who tapes these morning programs, and I think that there are some people, some folks have told me that they tape all of the programs on BAI. Well, if you tape any of the morning programs, last week we didn't have an air check, and we need an air check for Monday's program. So if you could call me later on today in the office at 212-209-2800. And let me know if we could make an exchange. Perhaps there's a tape that you might like. Maybe we can make that exchange at 212-209-2800. Let me know if you taped any of last week's wake-up call programs. Thank you. Guess was Ramsey Clark. We're trying to locate him in Iraq. So, as soon as we do that, we'll be talking to him. If not, we'll probably be talking to you. We have planned to talk to him as the last segment in today's program. Somewhere in Iraq. Somewhere between Iraq and a hard place. That attempt. It's 829 and 70 something degrees. Let's see, maybe we can take a few of your phone calls here at area code 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. And you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Okay, fine, thank you.
This is Carol Taylor, the Little Black Book. I was wondering if this continues, the bombing in Iraq, and an all-out war is undertaken by the man in the White House, what the legal implications would be of trying to impeach a person who's not really the president. Perhaps you all could investigate that kind of thing. And then I would like to hear more about the international conference, hello?
Yes.
Against racism, which is going to be held in Barbados, October 2nd through the 6th. Barbados, West Indies. I am going to that, and
mm-hmm.
perhaps you could give the Africans confer at hotmail.com information and a telephone number for contact to find out more about that. International Conference Against Racism is 1-866-213-2723. It is important, and I think the issue of the racism, colorism against countries of color, which this country has engaged in terms of war, very important. So the International Conference Against Racism is 1-866-213-2723. Would appreciate some more attention given to that.
Well, as we get closer to it, we haven't entered September yet, but as we get closer to it, we'll certainly be talking more about it, and we'll try and get some regular reports from Barbados when that happens.
That's fascinating. Fantastic. Fantastic. And thank you very much.
Okay, and thank you.
All right.
And once again, the website that was just given was africanconference@hotmail.com. And the phone number was 1-866-213-2723. That's 866-213-2723. We got another one there? Okay, B.A.R., you're on the air.
Good morning, Bernard.
Good morning.
Yes, I think you should get those tapes from last week because... I heard a few things on there, you know, people like saying they want to replace the morning host with somebody else or whatever. But in any case, I'm calling, this is Reverend Johnson from Staten Island. I'm calling because of the Apollo Theater and the Honorable Percy Sutton, who I heard state on his station about 4 years ago when they was attacking him, that when he, God do take him, to the ancestors, that he would like to lay in state at the Apollo Theater. And I think this great hero is not taken by the ancestors yet, and the powers that be, the Daily News and whoever they hire to destroy this man's reputation and this man's demeanor, for us to stand by and let this be done not only to Percy Sutton or Bernard White or anybody who stands up for all people, regardless of their ethnic, religious, socioeconomic, political background. We cannot stand by. We have to understand that if we do not take it like our brothers and sisters in Palestine and become suicide bombers, socially, emotionally, physically, and economically and otherwise, these people are never going to understand that we will use the concept and we have the option to be African-American suicide bombers. And I'll hang up and listen to what other people have to say about that.
African-American suicide bombers. Do you mean that metaphorically?
I mean that in the true social reality.
Hello?
I did that.
You did that? Okay.
I'm gonna make a call.
Okay, sorry about that. We're going to go on. And Sharan is trying to catch up with Ramsey in Iraq. But we'll see. BAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Anybody?
Nobody there. What about you? You're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, I just called to say that I was pretty appalled, but not really surprised that all the hogwash that was being thrown around on the air by the authoritarian, pompous totally partial great one, Gary Knoll. And as far as I'm concerned, his standing as a as an impartial person, whether it's certainly totally decimated. That type of harangue and accusations. If he had any cojones, as it were, he should be. This should be in a debate form with the moderator. It was just absolutely outrageous, and I just wonder how, to what respect all his vitamin health concepts are subject to reality or his own egotistical mentality.
Hmm. Well, you know, so wait, so some more remarks, man. I'm a little reluctant to use this term, but the late Samori Marksman had a term that he used when he felt people were doing what you said Gary was doing. He's called it windbaggery.
Windbaggery?
Yeah,
but it's very destructive. Very destructive, well, because a certain amount of people will believe that crap.
Well,
you know?
that's true, and that's unfortunate.
So what is he doing? He's actually, by not interviewing people, by not speaking to the other side, just giving carte blanche to this BS authoritarian fascist regime that was the pirates that took over. What is he doing? He's really trying to chip away at the foundations of the station.
Maybe,
I think he's a traitor.
Well, I don't know, but maybe today there'll be some talk about the massive amounts of money that was spent in a very short period of time. People flying to the Caribbean island, flying to Trinidad, staying in hotels,
yeah,
renting cars.
But let me ask you this. Why can't he sit down with you or anyone else on the other side and have an open debate with the moderator, point for point? Let's see what the points really are.
Well,
where are the facts?
I'm going to call for that. So we'll see whether that
clean the air out, because happens. The egotistical arrogance of that guy, you know, is just out, and it's so offensive. And anyone listening to the programming before, and the programming now, the only difference, the basic difference is before there was no free speech by the people working there, and they constantly tried to muzzle the audience, the members, and what else? It was also claimed that the people in opposition to this to that fascist Utrecht lead, etc., these people, us, were in the minority. I mean, that was spoken about every day. We were in the minority. It's just lie after lie after lie. And, you know, one can only think back and remember that imbecile, that total imbecile, what's his name? I forgot his name at the moment. A lunatic. Clayton Riley. I mean, the filth that he was permitted to spew out on the air, and the personal attacks that went on, the low level of programming, not to mention the race baiting and the attempt to divide people in terms of class, race, et cetera. I mean, and Gary Knoll gets up to... I mean, does he really think that because his name is Gary Knoll, people are going to believe that garbage? Have a great day.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens, too, is that what is happening? It winds up opening up these old wounds again, and we're forced to revisit them and have discussion about them. And... I'm not going to try and stifle that kind of discussion, because now it has to come out again. This was a sad page in WBAI's history, one that could have been avoided. I talked to the people who were directly involved with it, tried to explain to them on several occasions what would happen if they were to embark on such a journey. I thought that what was foremost in their mind was the mission of Pacifica, and they would not do anything to destroy it, and I was incorrect in believing that. And now what we have to do is try our best to do what we're doing, you know, to bring everything together, trying to heal some of the wounds that we can heal. There, of course, will be some that we will not be able to heal, and see if we can make this place a better place and continue to move in the direction that we were moving prior to the coup. And yes, there was a coup, Matilda. Let's see. BAI, you're on the air. Yes. Okay. You're on the air.
Hey, Bernard, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Okay, I just want to say I didn't hear Gary Null yesterday, and I listen to him all the time, just that when you're busy at work, sometimes you can't get to the radio. And what did he say that everyone's complaining about since last night?
Well, I think if you tune in today, you'll probably hear a lot of what you heard yesterday. It's supposed to be another report, part three of the report. But we'll see, and then maybe after that we'll have another discussion about this. Because I think with each time that he comes to the air, it's going to force more discussion about what went on, and we're approaching the anniversary
of the coup. Did you ever invite him to join you on the morning show?
No, I haven't.
But, that would be a good idea.
Okay, we'll see about doing that. And any venue that we can have it happen, we'll do that. Leslie Kagan has already agreed to engage in any kind of discussion around this. So we have one of the parties. Dan Coughlin is on vacation, but when he comes back, we're going to see if he's willing to sit down with Gary in public. Since this was done in public, perhaps there ought to be some discussion in public. Because there's a lot that people don't know. I don't know how much can be told without, you know, making one susceptible or making the institution susceptible to a lawsuit. But there's a lot that has happened that hasn't really been discussed with the listeners. We've decided to just go on, you know, just try and move forward and not point fingers. But I'm telling you, there are a lot of people who, and many of the people who were named yesterday as being good guys, have walked away with quite a bit of this institution, I'll say that.
Well, I know Clayton Riley was a lunatic. Your last caller was right. He was a very angry guy to be on the air. Gary Null's angry, but he also is a genius when it comes to research and finding out the truth in medicine. And I agree, he shouldn't air dirty laundry the way he's doing, probably. But, you know, there are certain aspects to him, like the AIDS thing, or just nutrients and oregano oil and et cetera and et cetera. But what I'm saying is I don't think he should be attacked until the whole dialogue is over. And I just want to also say about Amy. She did a report the other day about infections in the minority communities of HIV and all that. And you know what? She doesn't realize that she's getting these reports. And you know what? She's 99% right about everything. 99%. But when it comes to the HIV infection, she doesn't realize that the reason she's seeing that, oh, it's affecting the minority women more, is because they're the ones going to the emergency room with drug overdoses and problems of poverty, and you're not going to see that in a white emergency room in the suburbs. So she's getting a report of like 20 or 30 or 50 women who are going in for drug rehab, and then these scientists and researchers aren't going to people's houses in Harlem, in the Bronx, and testing these people. It is not spreading in those communities. It's spreading wherever there is drug use. And according to Gary and his research with thousands of doctors, biologists, scientists, I don't know if you saw the movie or read his book, Dissecting the Myth of AIDS, Deconstructing, I mean, you'll see that if you look at the material and the research, you'll find that what he's trying to convey to the public is true, and there is not one dialogue on that on Democracy Now.
Okay, you know, I haven't seen any of the data, so I can't really talk about that. But thank you for your call. And let's see who we have here. BAI, you're on the air.
Bernard?
Yes, sir.
David Rothenberg.
How are you, sir?
Fine. I heard yesterday's... Let me lower the radio. I heard... I wouldn't have been listening to the Vitamin King, but somebody called and said, put them on. The thing that strikes me that hasn't been mentioned is that the Vitamin King never comes to the station. How would he... Even during the Reign of Terror... I've been at the station for over 30 years. I've seen him there once. He does his program from home or his office. He's never been there to know what goes on at the station. So I dismiss any of his reports as secondhand. And in this case, the hand that's second is Paul DiRienzo, who was part of the coup and is his new cohort.
Mm-hmm.
So the information is rather skewed. And if you did have a debate with him at the station... somebody would have to show him where it is, because he doesn't know where BAI is. He doesn't know any of the people there, and all of his information is questionable. It was a reign of terror for those of us that were there last year. We saw money being piddled away, a station that was $600,000, or a network that was $600,000 in the black went to $5 million in the red. And we saw, well, the absentee ownership. They became bored with it after a while, after the coup. They weren't around.
Hmm. How long have you been with WBA?
Since water was invented.
It was way
1968, I think. I came on as a guest, and I had my first show in 69.
If I were going
and I've seen Gary Noel once in all my years there.
And if I was going to talk about this radio station, I don't think I could avoid talking to you, Bob Fass.
I wouldn't know what I only know what Gary looks like because I've seen him on television.
Hmm.
And that's how I recognized him once at the station before the coup. I never saw him. Well, I hardly came during the coup because it was like the Planet of the Apes. You'd see little faces peering out from you. Remember in Planet of the Apes, you never saw people. And then from the bushes, you saw somebody sticking their head out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was like then. Everybody was so afraid to speak.
Hmm.
It was a horrible condition.
Well, it sounded that way from the outside also.
And when that was part of it, people like you were not there, not like you. You weren't there, which makes going down there, I hate to say this publicly for the record, but...
I got it on tape. Go ahead.
It wasn't so bad. It's not so bad when you're there.
Okay.
But it was horrendous, and he was never there. He had no idea. He was never at the station. He still isn't at the station. He does his program from somewhere else. And that you gave him 56 minutes. I heard some caller say, why did you cut him off at the end? You had 4 minutes to answer his 56 minutes, unlike Congressman Rangel, who was taken off the air by Utrice, who charged in the middle of a congressman. She came in the middle of his interview and cut him off. Big difference.
It was Major Owens.
Major Owens, right? Sorry.
Bernard, isn't the hour 55 minutes?
Yeah, the hour is 55 minutes.
So a minute over time.
Well, you know, I mean, there are always going to be those who will pull out whatever they can to kind of knock things down. But
I got so upset listening to it yesterday. I threw
like
all my vitamins away.
Sound like you're still upset, Dave.
I am. Because... It's an injustice, and you know we're getting back on our feet, and we don't need somebody with his self-serving vitamin sales to whatever his motives are. I don't understand them. Since I don't know him and never see him, I have no idea to come to terms with his motives.
Well, the report continued on another radio station too.
Well, I'm told that he urges people to listen to the other station, and then that's what he should do, is go to the other station. But and he didn't participate in the fundraising drive this August by his choice. I don't know if that's been revealed. He just chose not to help us in the fundraising. Not nice. As my grandmother used to say, there are two kinds of people in the world, nice and not nice. That young man, not nice.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, David Rothenberg. You are listening to WBAI in New York. We've been unable to make our connection to Iraq. Hopefully, Democracy Now! Will be able to make their connection. Let's see. It is 8:50, around 77 degrees, isn't it?
Mm. About.
She's blowing into the wind. I don't know. Okay, we'll go back and take a few more of your phone calls here at area code 212-209-2900. And you're on the air.
Yes. Good morning, Bernard.
Good morning, sir.
Bernard, you've been doing a fine job since you came back. Matter of fact, see, like, you've been going along with Elias Muhammad used to say, if you got a dirty glass, put a clean glass next to it. And that's exactly what you've been doing. You've been putting a clean glass next to a dirty glass.
Well, we've got a lot of folks here who are very much interested in making this radio station work. And we've all been doing a lot of work.
Yeah, well, like I said, no, when y'all came back, y'all didn't come back bad mouthing people and stuff like that. You didn't air in a lot of dirty laundry. So that's why I say you must be was following the teacher of Elias Muhammad. Anytime you got dirty glass, just put a clean glass next to it.
Hmm.
Well, you have a nice day, Bernard.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, I think we went through the normal amount of time that people who were deeply wounded had their say. And then since then, we've just been doing regular programming. And good programming, too. BAI, you're on the air.
Hi, Bernard.
Hi there.
Matt? Okay. Once again, I'm all upset about what's going on. And I called before other people were coming in, so everybody's pretty much said what I wanted to say. But I was calling because I wanted to know if and when there would be the other shoe or the other half of the debate. I, too, was just outraged. In the middle of my anger, I almost called and said, listen, I am not going to send in the rest of my pledge and, you know, that kind of thing, unless this guy is on the air, but I'm not going to do that. And I appreciate your, you know, having him on. But I do want to know if there's going to be just a minute, let me turn my radio down.
Okay. And this is
what I did want to know is whether, you know, there's going to be a formal rebuttal.
I think what can happen as a result of this, since so many issues were covered, is that it might be an ideal opportunity, because we haven't done this yet, is to go over issue by issue that was raised.
Mm-hmm.
And begin to present both sides to those issues. Well, actually, there is no other side, because the facts speak for themselves. I mean, this stuff has all been documented. So what we can do is have a full discussion about all of these issues. We probably won't be able to give the names, but our audience is smart. They'll be able to figure out who the guilty people are. And maybe this is a time that we can begin to do that. And hopefully Gary Null will be a part of that discussion. I'm sure that I see no reason why he wouldn't consent to being a part of it. He certainly has invested a lot of time in putting together his
Well, he already document. Is. I mean, by his statements, he's a part of it. And if he's not willing to engage in the kind of process that you just said, then, in speaking to the motivations, I was trying to go think about that, you know, it coming out now. And I think I had this, that it's a way to cover his impotence or his inactions or his, that, I think that comes along with an intellectual rationalization of things that he, as far as I know, during the whole thing that was taking place, he never took a stand, or he never took any action in terms of what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have respect for say an Armand DeMille, who after things were over and as he realized what was happening, he said publicly, you know, that he was wrong, that he made some mistakes, and that he welcomed the people back. But other folks, particularly those who made an investment with the previous regime, find it difficult now to say that I was wrong. So what they do is they seem to try and make their position, the right. previous position,
it's
right.
It's an intellectual cowardice is what I came to hearing that yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I appreciate that. Again, I've been curious as to, because there's been other individuals. I've just been curious about your process there since this has happened, because there are still people on the air, which I don't, it's not a position I'm taking, there's still people on the air who were bitterly attacking the people whose leadership, who provided the leadership to reclaim the station, and the people are still on the air. And I think that, you know, Juan Gonzalez was one of the people who took a lot of that, and he took it again yesterday. And so I'm just curious as to the process of whether you have any process there of people, you know, who are still on the air, who bitterly attacked the people responsible for the station coming back. And it's like, well, what's going on there? Well, what's going on with those people?
I guess you'd call it truth and reconciliation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for
thank
your call.
Thank you, Bernard. Yeah.
Okay.
Bye.
Yeah. Okay, Robert.
Just an observation, a thought, a question. You know, I've noticed the promotion of the WWRL show for Gary Null, almost as if he's trying to create an exodus of listeners from WBAI to WWRL. And I can't help but ask the question, what happens when an acquisitive corporation in the United States strip mines its credibility in a presumably white middle-class audience? Well, they then try to expand their market into the third world. Just wondering.
Well, history is on your side. Perhaps we'll have to take a closer look at that.
There's much to it.
Seems the way history operates. Well, I hope you followed that, folks. Hope you did.
Well, actually, it's quite clear. Not only WWRL, but new operations in the increasingly gentrified Harlem by the Gary Null entity.
Yeah. Radio Marti for Harlem. Well, we'll see. We'll see where that goes. Do want to thank you, Robert Knight, as well as Ian Forrest. Thank you, Ian, for your participation. He's worked his way on the microphone. That's it for him. He was just too good. He's not going to be coming back. We'll stop these embryos before they gestate. No, he was too good. We can't have him around here. Ian, go home. And thank you, Sharon Louise Harper.
Thank you, Bernard White.
Okay. Let's see. Maybe Robert will be here tomorrow. I hope so.
Maybe.
No,
we
got to do the
report
to the listener tomorrow. So maybe we'll impose on him for Thursday. Well, you have been listening to WBAI in New York, and hopefully you'll continue throughout the day. Coming up in just a few moments is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and the crew. Please stay tuned throughout the broadcast day. That's right, all day long. Make WBAI your companion and your audio companion. And until next time, I'm Bernard White with co-host Amy Goodman. Until next time, stay strong and pay close attention.